Willie, take me back to growing up in Fredericton. Why hockey? How did you find yourself skating and playing the game?
Well, I was the youngest of 13 children, and thanks to my older brother, as I was growing up, I started skating at the age of 3 and started playing organized hockey at the age of 5 and, you know, played up through the ranks. I had a rink in my backyard, and I was out on the ice every day. I remember wearing a pair of the runners that you tape on your bottoms of your boots and go out, and then I developed into skates. And I was just, after I found out that I could maneuver a puck and do some things that I never felt that I could do before, I was obsessed with the sport. So I started playing organized hockey at the age of 5 and kind of played up through the ranks. And when I was 14 and 15, I had the opportunity to play with my brother, who was probably about 18 years older than I. But it was just a lot of fun being on the ice and not only skating on the rink in my backyard, but there were ponds and lakes and creeks and rivers, and I used to skate to school, and I just decided, the elementary school was 2.5 blocks away from where my home was, and I'd skate to school and skate back home. And then when I was 14, I decided I wanted to become a professional hockey player.
Okay.
And being the youngest of 13 children, my parents were very strict on staying in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were lots of games to play, but the first priority was keep my homework up and keep my grades up.
Right.
And basically, it was great growing up. Most of my brothers and sisters had married, moved away, and my younger sister and myself were the only two living at home at that time. So I left my home at when I was 17 to go up to Quebec to go to school and play hockey. And I played my first year junior with the Quebec Frontenacs. Phil Watson was the coach.
Sure.
Phil played with the Rangers back in the 40s. And then the second year I played in Kitchener, Ontario. And, you know, back then, none of the players wore any helmets, no face shields, no face guards. The goalies didn't wear any masks. So, you know, your face was exposed to pucks and sticks and everything else that was flying around on the ice. And there was a slap shot and a ricochet, and I'm in front of the net, and the puck comes up and hits me flat in the right eye. And I remember dropping down to the ice, and I could feel the blood rushing down my face. And the next thing I knew, I was placed in an ambulance and taken to the hospital.
This is where the story gets really interesting for me, because you are, you know, known as being the first man of color to play in the National Hockey League. But when I hear you talk, Willie, the eye injury to you know, that's the achievement. And not that's not an achievement,
no.
But you played professional hockey as long as you did with one eye.
Yeah.
That's an incredible achievement, isn't it?
Yes. Well, you know, I think it is. But, you know, when I was in the hospital in the recovery room, Dr. Henderson was the surgeon, a fine surgeon. But the impact of the puck completely shattered the retina in my right eye. And he said, Willie, he says, you're going to be blind and you'll never play hockey again.
Wow.
Well, you know, I kind of slumped back in my hospital bed, and the goals and dreams that I had set for myself seemingly were gone. So I was in the hospital for about another 4 or 5 days. I got out of the hospital, and the only difference I felt about myself is that I just couldn't see it in my right eye,
mm-hmm.
You know. So I started back skating again, and then I got back into the game. And being a left-hand shot and playing left wing, to compensate, I had to turn my head all the way around to the right to pick the puck up with my left eye. And consequently, I was over-skating the puck and missing the net. And I said, Willie, what's wrong? So I just said, forget about what you can't see and concentrate on what you can see. So my game started to pick up. I started scoring some goals, and the season ended. And either I have to turn pro or play amateur. And I had kept my fingers crossed that hopefully I'd be contacted by a professional team.
Yeah.
And I went back to my hometown. And see, I never told my parents that I was blind, because when I came back to play, they thought that I had recovered from the injury. And they said, oh, thank God, he's all right. So I never told them, because I knew that they would worry. I told my younger sister, Betty, and I swore her to secrecy. I said, please don't say anything to anybody, because if they find out that I'm blind, I won't be able to play pro and definitely won't be able to play in the National Hockey League. So I went to Quebec and met Punch Hamelak, who was the coach and general manager. Got into some gear, started practicing, and I made the team. But I didn't disclose the fact that I couldn't see it in my right eye. I mean, I'm playing left wing.
Yeah.
We won the championship that year, the Duke of Edinburgh Trophy. It's like winning the Stanley Cup in the National Hockey League.
Quebec League versus the Western right. League, right?
Well, it was the Quebec League.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Just the Quebec League. Okay. So I said, Willie, you can do anything you set your mind to do if you feel strongly within your heart, within your mind. And I played that year. Then the next 2 years, I went to the Bruins training camp, and then I came back to Quebec and played. And then the Bruins called me up on January the 18th, 1950, up to meet the Bruins in Montreal to play two games against the Montreal Canadiens. So when I stepped on the ice on January the 18th, you know, I became the first player of color to play in the National Hockey League. And I was no stranger to the Montreal fans because I had played junior against the Montreal Junior Canadiens. And then the Pro League, I played against the Montreal Royals. So when I stepped on the ice, I was just Willie O'Ree with the Bruins jersey on. And I could see fans pointing in my direction.
Sure. This is important, so I want to table it for a second because I don't think I'm doing justice not talking about the injury. Your sister knew. Who else knew?
Nobody.
Nobody on the team? You couldn't confide in a trainer?
No, nobody knew.
Was that consistent throughout?
Yes.
Right to the end of your career?
Right to the end of my career. I didn't tell anybody. I never took an eye exam. That's the thing.
Okay.
I never stood in front of an eye machine because if I had it, they would have definitely found out that I was, you know, blind in my right eye.
Right. We're talking about the 50s, too, because so you didn't have LASIK or anything like that.
No, nothing like that.
I mean, the kind of the recovery and the assistance that was available to you, there was nothing, right?
Nothing.
And you just took it upon yourself to adapt to it.
Yes.
And how long did that take? I mean, you talk about, you know, Willie, you gotta just worry about what you can see. But how long did it take to adapt to that?
Well, it took a few years. I mean, when I looked at something, I could see out of my left eye, but I just couldn't see out of in my right eye.
Yeah.
And I just decided, well, you know, just play and just hope for the best. But later on, my eye started paining me quite extensively, and I went to the doctor, and they said that they could inject a solution in my eye that would deaden some of the pain, but not all of it. But
wow.
but later on, I had to have my eye removed, and now I wear it's a prosthesis,
sure.
It's like a contact lens.
Yeah,
yeah. I have to take care of it, take it out, and with a cleaning solution and stuff. But
so hockey's one thing, but what about your life? I mean, do you drive?
I drive. Yeah.
So you adapted beyond just the ice.
Yeah, but it's a lot. It's a lot of this, and I drive a little Ford Ranger pickup,
okay.
And I have one of those mirrors. It's about that wide, and it's about goes all the way across. In the windshield,
right.
So when I'm looking, I can see vehicles coming on my right side, and I can see people
okay.
on the sidewalk or stuff like that. But I still have to do that, and then walking with my wife, I have to always keep her on the left hand
sure.
side because I always bump into her if she's on my right side unless I keep turning my head.
In conversation with Willie O'Ree, one more about the sight and how that affected you on the ice. Because you were a winger, you talked about having to move your head. And did it affect the way you were able to receive and take a pass?
Yes, it did. I always had to keep my head turned to the right.
Yeah.
You know, but then the nice thing when I, as I said, I played left wing the most of my career.
Mm-hmm.
But I was traded to the Los Angeles Blades in 1961, and I went and I made the team again. I didn't tell them that I couldn't see out of my right eye. I was good enough to make the team.
Right.
But when I came to training camp in 1965.
Right.
Yes. Alfie Pike was the coach, and when I got to training camp, they had about seven left wingers, and they only had one or two right wingers. So Alfie said, Willie, have you ever played right wing? And I said, no. I said, I've always played left wing. He says, well, why didn't you give it a try? I could use your speed on the right side.
Sure.
So I said, sure, I'll give it a try. So now I switch over to the right side. Now the boards are here. I don't have to be doing this. I can see the play coming from my left. And It took me a few games, and I finished the last 12 years of my career. I played on the right side and won the goal scoring in 1965 and won it in 1969 in San Diego, just due to the fact that I'd switched over.
Did you ever get into trouble? Because the era that you played in was a lot different, and, you know, crazy stuff happened on the ice. Did you have to do anything when players are scrumming to kind of avoid getting suckered?
Oh, yeah. I had to fight. I mean, I fought because I had to, not because I wanted to. But, guys just, you know, wanted to see what I was made of. And, I won fights and lost fights. But I never thought about, you know, protecting, having my eye injured.
Right.
I just went out there and, you know, and tried to be the best player I could be.
Willie O'Ree's our guest. We go back to January 1958 in Montreal. You become the first player of color. You're a pioneer in the National Hockey League. Are you aware on that date of what you're doing?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't aware until the next day. I read it in the paper. I was just so excited about being called up and having the opportunity to play against the Montreal Canadiens, who were at that time winning the Stanley Cup over and over and over. But we were very fortunate to beat Canadiens that night. We shut them out 3-0, and I was just happy that the Bruins gave me the opportunity to come up.
Do you have did you have family and friends? Were they able to come watch that game?
My mom and dad came up. Oh. My brother came up. Some of my close friends came up. Yeah, and I saw them after the game, and they were very excited. And then we were getting on the train. The Canadians had their car, and the Bruins had their car. And then we went to Boston and got there on the next day. And then I played my second game on Sunday, and then flew back to Quebec and joined the Quebec Aces.
Was that everything you hoped it would be? I mean, the dream was to make the National Hockey League. You finally do that in all places, Montreal. But was it what you'd hoped? Was it that what you dreamt of?
No. Well, yes, but I wanted to stay in the National Hockey League.
Yep.
You know, when they said we brought Willie up for an emergency. I thought that I played well, but then they decided that I was going to go back to Quebec, and then, you know, I played with Quebec for 6 years, and I was keeping my fingers crossed that the Bruins would recall me, and then they did in 1960, and I played 43 more games. It was the series of 60 and 61.
That opportunity, that time, what was it like? Because you made your debut in Canada, but now you go to the United States, and I think you've spoken before that it was different racially,
yes,
right?
It was different. I had some racial problems, racial slurs and remarks on the ice from players on the opposition and fans, but thanks to my older brother, and not only my brother and my friend, but he was my mentor,
mm-hmm.
and he taught me a lot that I needed to know if I was going to pursue hockey as a career. And he said, "Willie, don't worry about name calling." He says, "If they can't accept you for the individual that you are, it's their problem, not yours." He says, "Just go out and work as hard as you can, and you know you can't change the color of your skin." And you wouldn't want to, but just be the individual that you are, and everything will work out.
60-61, you play 43 games with the Boston Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
Who are your teammates?
Charlie Burns and Don McKinney.
Okay.
Yeah, play with them. And the Bruin organization was great. I mean, they thought enough of me to bring me up, and the players themselves were great. I have the utmost admiration for the entire Bruin organization, and if anybody asks me who's your favorite team, I say naturally the Bruins. But I'm just glad that I had the opportunity, and I'm glad that I was in a position to open doors and break down barriers for not only black players but players of color to get into the league and play.
Again, in that season, were you able to enjoy being in the National Hockey League, or were you still, you know, kind of coming to grips with what people in Chicago might be yelling
you,
or the Rangers, right?
I faced with it in some of the other cities, but I just went out and played, and the players were very supportive, the guys that I played with in the entire team. were very supportive. There was, if there was an altercation on the ice and I was mixed in it, and I wanted to make sure that somebody was covering my back and things like this. So, you know.
You would move on to the Western Hockey League, and you'd play in Los Angeles and San Diego predominantly. I think it's unfair in a way to kind of refer to that as minor league hockey because it's a 6-team NHL, not a 30-team NHL.
Yeah.
The caliber of those leagues were really good, weren't
yes,
they?
Yes, they were, yeah. There was about 12 teams in the Western League when I came aboard. And there was a lot of good hockey players that played, and I was very fortunate to play 6 years with the Blades, and then in 1967 was the first expansion of the NHL, and that's when the Los Angeles Kings come into the Fabulous Forum in Inglewood, and they weren't going to have two teams in Los Angeles, so the team that I was on was disbanded, but. Max McNabb, who was the coach and general manager of the San Diego Gulls, and Bob Breitbart, the owner and founder of the sports arena, contacted me in Los Angeles and said, Willie, how would you like to come to San Diego? And I said, well, I says, if we could work something out. And I had played against San Diego the first year that they were in the league, and on the weekends they'd get 13,000, fill the building, and they had a good team. And so they contacted me and said, yes, we've acquired your contract. Come down and negotiate. And I had to make a couple of trips down. But I signed a one-year contract and played. And then the next year I signed a two-year contract and played. And then I decided that, I was going to stay in San Diego. And I played 7 years with them. And then I retired in 1980.
Boy, you had some good years.
Yes, I did.
I mean, you had, I look back, and I believe it's, just taking a look here, 68, 69, you had 79 points in 70 games for San Diego.
Yeah.
Were you, I mean, always a difficult question to ask somebody, but you were a star in that league, right? At least in prolific in scoring.
Yeah, they say I was. I considered myself an offensive hockey player, you know, and I could score goals. I would always, be in front of the net and make sure that if the puck's on my stick, it's on and off. If I have the opportunity to, get a shot on the goal, but I played with some good players, and I've got to say that Warren Hines was my center iceman in Los Angeles when I won the goal scoring, and also in San Diego when I won goal scoring in '65 and. He just knew where I was on the ice. I mean, he did. He could close his eyes and, he could dump that puck, and he knew that I was going to be there. And so we worked very well together, and we were good. I believe in making things happen rather than letting things happen. And that's the type of hockey player that I was through my career.
Willie O'Ree is our guest. When did you go from being a pioneer to just being Willie O'Ree, a hockey player? Did that ever happen?
Well, I don't think it happened. When I retired in 1980, I wanted to stay in hockey in some capacity, either doing some community service work or maybe some scouting or some coaching. But it just seemed that door would open and close. But I had the goal that I had set for myself. I was going to get back into hockey in some capacity. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing that I kept in my mind. But I had numerous jobs. I was a car salesman in San Diego. I worked construction. And then I got into the private security business for a number of years. And I was working at the Hotel Del Coronado. It's a historical hotel over in Coronado Island. I was working in the security department, and I was just ending my my fifth year there, and Brian McBride was the newly appointed vice president of the NHL's diversity program back then. Mm-hmm. And he was in a meeting with Lou Vero from USA Hockey and four or five other gentlemen, and what they wanted to do is they wanted to open hockey up to every boy and girl possible. And so Jackie Robinson's name come up, and they said, yeah, Jackie broke the color barrier back in the early days. And then they said, well, Lou Vero said, well, we've got our own Jackie Robinson in hockey. And the room went silent, and they said, well, who is it? And Lou said, Willie O'Ree. He says, I was living in New York and watched him play in the old Madison Square Gardens. So Brian McBride says, well, is he still alive? So Lou, yeah, he says, he's out there. He played with the San Diego Gulls in San Diego. Yeah. So Brian said, well, shoot, maybe we should get a hold of him and maybe he'd like to get involved in this this program, be an ambassador, you know. And so one thing led to another. Brian got a hold of me and kind of laid the program out. And I looked at it and I said, yeah, I said, I'd be more than happy to. So I gave him a notice at the hotel. And then Brian wanted to honor me as far as breaking the color barrier. Mm-hmm. So he says, I'd like to have a weekend of hockey in Boston, because I broke in with the Bruins. And we brought kids in from these programs and just let we had them play, and we just treated them like NHL players. And then that's how it all started. And then now we have probably over 60 programs. And then Norm, the director of the Heroes program, he's got about 18 teams. So it's just been a great thing for me. And on my 40th anniversary, the All-Star game was in Vancouver.
Yep.
And Commissioner Bettman appointed me the director of the NHL's diversity. And I've been doing it now for going on 18 years, and it's just been great.
In conversation with Willie O'Ree, let's explore this for a bit. Growing up in Fredericton, was the color of your skin an issue?
No, it wasn't. No. You know, 98% of the my friends were white. There was probably six players of color in the schools, but
hockey players.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't alone.
No.
Okay.
I weren't alone. And then you know, I was the only black player on the rugby team. Mm-hmm. I was only a black player on the hockey team that I played, but. I just boys and girls just had fun, you know, just playing. And it wasn't until later on that, you know, I got involved in more of the racial remarks and racial slurs. But I had a great time growing up.
You mentioned Jackie Robinson. You have a great story of how your paths not crossed once, but crossed twice.
Twice, yes, yes. When I was 14. I also played baseball.
Right.
And a lot of people considered I was a better baseball player than hockey, but they didn't know the burning desire that I had inside that I was going to play hockey. And so we won the championship that year in 1949, and our team was to be taken to New York to see the Empire State Building and Radio Music City Hall and Coney Island, and saw Mr. Robinson play, was introduced to him after the game. And he said, well, Mr. Robinson, I said, I also play hockey. And he said, oh, I didn't know there were any kids of color playing hockey. I said, yeah, there's a few. And we talked to him for probably another 5-6 minutes. And then we left. And then when I was traded to the Los Angeles Blades in 1961, in 1962, the NAACP had a luncheon in Mr. Robinson's honor. Mm-hmm. And I got an invitation through the hockey club. And went to the reception and the luncheon, and Mr. Robinson was standing over in a corner talking to some media people and the coach of the Blaze, the team that I was playing for, and a couple of players waited in the off sign. And then we went over, and the coach said, Mr. Robinson, he said, I'd like to introduce you to three players that play for the team here in Los Angeles, especially Willie O'Ree, who was newly acquired from the Hull Ottawa Canadian. And Mr. Robinson turned and he looked me in the eye and he says, you're the, Willie O'Ree, you're the young fellow I met in Brooklyn. Now, this was 1949 to 1962. And I mean, it just made a big impact on me. It really did.
Willie, were you ever a political person by nature?
No.
Were you dragged into the politics of what the 60s became in terms of racial equality?
When I was playing in Los Angeles, I was involved in the riots there, at the Watts riots when I was playing there. But
when you say involved, what do you mean?
Well, actually, I didn't mean involved. I mean, I was playing there.
Okay.
And then I was playing there, and the thing was that there were areas that you know, you just shouldn't go into,
yeah.
And areas that you just knew that were off limits.
Right.
But I really didn't really get involved in the in the politics and the in that part of it. I decided I was just going to play hockey and just try and represent the hockey club.
Were you asked to be, though?
No.
Was there pressure? Because you had a profile as a professional athlete, did somebody come to you ever and ask you to be part of it?
No.
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 What did you make of it going on? You're just plying your trade, playing hockey. Well,
that's
all is changing, right?
Yeah, the world's changing, and it's, I was, there were times where, places where, I couldn't go in because of my color, but other than that, I just stuck to playing hockey and representing the hockey club to the best of my ability all the years that I played.
In conversation with Willie O'Ree, you finish hockey. The National Hockey League brings you on board with the diversity program. You're basically starting something, right? Or was there something in place? Did you inherit a program, or did you help kind of develop the program today?
No, there were approximately five programs already in existence.
Okay.
But what I did is my job was to go around and visit schools, boys and girls clubs, juvenile detention facilities, YMYWCAs, just to let boys and girls know that there is another sport that they can play if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was traveling around 15 days a month back then, and I was kept quite busy, and then all of a sudden we were, a lot of the programs, probably 97% of the programs that are in existence are all in NHL cities. But I think I had a hand in getting some of these programs started, and then visiting them and doing clinics and, going back and speaking at schools and things like that.
What was the initial reaction? Like, what was the initial message that you gave the kids?
Well, basically, I just told them about staying in school and, keeping your grades up, setting goals for yourselves and working towards your goals, and don't let anybody tell you that you can't attain your goal. If you really believe within your heart, within your mind. And I use my example, my eye injury as an example.
Yeah.
Because when the doctor told me that I'd never play hockey again, I couldn't accept that, because he didn't know the burning desire. And I told these boys and girls just to work hard, stay in school, and feel good about yourself, like yourself, and don't take the fact that if you really want to do something, and then go for it and make it happen, because you can make a difference.
Has this been easy? Has this been in terms of the growth of programs across North America?
Yeah.
I know we talk a lot about the States, and there's specific programs, but in your role, has this been easy growth, or has this still been a challenge to grow these programs?
Well, it's still been a challenge, but it seems that it's been easy for me. When I go into a city and if I have to do a couple of schools and a clinic, it really doesn't seem like a job, because I can relate to these boys and girls and let them know that, be all that you can be, feel good about yourself. I like myself. I always like myself, and I've always felt good about myself. And I just teach them about, having respect, for other people and things of this, because this is the way that I was raised by my parents. And thanks to my older brother, who I don't think I would have been able to play as long as I did if I hadn't listened to my brother and taken the information real serious.
What kind of pride do you have when you see programs like Heroes or Snyder Hockey in Philadelphia. Or Newark or Hockey in Harlem? I mean, there are some just tremendous programs around North America.
Yeah, and I've been to them all, and it's just a nice feeling to go there and see these boys and girls, on the ice and playing hockey and doing something that they really enjoy. And I said, hockey's a fun sport. If you're not having fun, don't play it.
Right.
And that's, I had two sons that played till they were 18, and then they wanted to get into other ventures. But I supported them while they played, and they said, we're having fun. And I said, well, keep playing.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because your journey, while some would, you know, probably like to look at it as, you know, well, how did you find hockey? You loved hockey.
Mm-hmm, I did.
But you look at heroes here in Calgary, in the Northeast, it's a means to an end. It gets them elevated. It gets them confidence. It puts them in the mainstream. Or Snyder Hockey, which I had a pleasure of seeing a couple years ago in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and Jim Britt.
Oh, what an amazing program. Yeah. And it's beyond just the ice, right?
I know it. Yeah.
And that's, to me, is the strength of hockey, isn't it?
That's true, yeah. I was down in Philadelphia last year for the Willie Reese Skills Weekend with Jim. Does a fantastic job. He has a fantastic program down there. And we're going back again, I think, in March to do the Willie Reese Skills Weekend.
When you talk to kids today, we're not quite 60 years from you breaking that barrier. Yeah. How much of it is about equality? How much of it is about that? Or how much of it is about the message you keep talking about, which is believing in yourself and adapting and things like that?
You really have to believe in yourself and feel good about yourself and like yourself. You know, there's more kids playing hockey today than ever before, and there are more kids of color now playing hockey due to watching it on TV and then getting involved with these programs. And I just say that you can become anything you want to. You really can, but believe in yourself. You really have to believe in yourself. And three of the words that I use when I go and speak at these schools are choices. What is it? Choices, decisions, consequences.
Right.
Those three words. You use them every day in your life. Mm-hmm. You may not realize it, but you do. You do. And these boys and girls that I come in contact with, you know, some of them have already known a lot about myself because they get on the internet and Google me, and you know, they sometimes I go to Google and find out some of the things that I don't know about myself, but they're aware of that, you know, the things that I've done, things that I've accomplished, and it's just nice to know that that I'm in a position to give back to the sport and give back to the community what hockey had given me over the years that I played. And the youth development of this country, it's the greatest. I thank Commissioner Bettman for appointing me the director.
With Willie O'Ree, let's talk a couple questions here to finish up on hockey. Do you like the game now? Or are you a fan of the way the game's played now?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I love this 3-on-3. I wish they had introduced that years ago. Yeah. I wish I had been able to been playing when, you know, the 4-on-4 and the 3-on-3, yeah. They've made some rule changes that have made the game more exciting for the fans. I just love watching the game at the arenas. I watch a lot on the telly, but I like being in the arenas and going down and talking to the players.
Who was your heroes growing up?
Rocket Richard and Gordie Howe.
Well, not bad, eh?
No, they were my both idols growing up, and I said one day maybe I'll have the opportunity to play either with them or against them, and I did get that. That was one of the dreams that came true for me.
Gordie never gave you one of those famous.
Oh
albums.
Yes,
he did.
Yes, he did. Yes, yes, right in the corners. Yeah.
Oh wow!
But I've met Gordie on several occasions, sure. And he's just the down to earth, a true gentleman, and just a great hockey player.
Best player you played with in your career?
Oh.
And it doesn't have to be an NHL player. I mean,
yeah.
You know, who's the best player?
Yeah. I think my center iceman was Warren Hines.
Yeah.
I think that he was probably the best player that I had the opportunity to play with. Although I had, you know, I played with other center icemen and things, but when we hooked up and. I guess he just knew what I could do, and he didn't have to really hesitate from time. You only have a second or two to make a decision. And we teamed up pretty good, and I did very well.
Willie, this journey, this is incredible, isn't it? It really is.
I think so. I just take it a day at a time, and you know, and it's just being around these boys and girls that keep you feeling young and thinking young, and I think there's a lot to that.
I can't express my appreciation of what you did in terms of being a pioneer, because socially that was so important to this game. We needed to cross that barrier. We needed to make it inclusive.
Right.
But as I sit here, as a guy who spends all my time around hockey, the fact that you played with one eye and adapted to it is so incredible to me, and you deserve more credit for that. Not more credit, because that's important, but you deserve credit for what you did and the attitude that you took upon that. I just think that part of your story is undertold sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I just forget about it, you know.
You do, eh?
Yeah, I just forget about it. But, you know, and then when I start thinking of you know, some of the things I've accomplished over the years, it just makes me feel that, you know, that I was put on this earth for a reason, and I have the opportunity to give back.
Very pleased to have joined this conversation. Norm Flynn from Heroes, the originator, the man behind, the man, the myth, legend.
Still wash the jerseys and make are tied up properly.
We're not giving you a crown. We're just trying to figure out the title.
Okay, then fine, I'll take it.
Okay. Our good friend Kevin Hodgson from Heroes here in Calgary, and of course Willie O'Ree, who is here at the request and hosted by Heroes. And Kevin, this is a pretty incredible guy.
Yeah, you know, when you're a kid, and I heard you asking Willie who his heroes were growing up, and I think as kids we all have heroes growing up, but, you know, as you get older, you realize sometimes you meet your heroes when you're 35 years of age, like I was, and I didn't...
Very pleased to have joined this conversation. Norm Flynn from Heroes, the originator, the man behind, the man, the myth, legend.
Still wash the jerseys and make are tied up properly.
We're not giving you a crown. We're just trying to figure out the title.
Okay, then fine. I'll take it.
Okay. Our good friend Kevin Hodgson from Heroes here in Calgary, and of course Willie O'Ree, who is here at the request and hosted by Heroes. And Kevin, this is a pretty incredible guy.
Yeah, you know, when you're a kid, and I heard you asking Willie who his heroes were growing up, and I think as kids we all have heroes growing up, but, you know, as you get older, you realize sometimes you meet your heroes when you're 35 years of age, like I was, and I didn't realize, you know, the first time I met Willie, the impact he'd have on my life and that sort of thing, and I learned, you know, I've spent probably, 20 weekends with this guy, and I still learn something new every time. I learned today that he was probably a terrible car salesman, because I listened to him soft sell the impact that he's made in a lot of kids' lives, you know, over the years. But, you know, I hope when I'm 80, I'm ripping around like Willie is and making impacts on people's lives the way that he is. I think we're, you know, our organization is really fortunate to be inspired by him. And personally, you know, all of us that get to spend a little time with him, I think it makes us better people as well.
Norm, the legacy of Willie O'Ree kind of blends into Heroes, doesn't it? I mean, we talk about the work that he's done all over the nation. Now you're doing it all over the world, really, right?
I met Willie 16 years ago in Salt Lake City at a Hockey is for Everyone initiative. And I went in blind, not knowing what's going on with what Willie was doing, with what the NHL was doing, with kids in areas that they never had a chance to play. And that developed a really good footprint for us to set the Heroes program in motion. So 15 years ago, we started with one program in downtown Eastside with 36 boys and girls. We now have 18 programs. We're working with over 650 boys and girls a year. Next year, we'll have 20 programs. It keeps growing exponentially. And it's to do with a lot of our volunteers, but it's got a lot to do with the engine and with Willie in the driver's seat. And, you know, him coming to speak to the kids is wonderful. The kids really appreciate it, having like a guest speaker like Mr. O'Ree. And at the end of the day, they're really learning a lot about history.
Yeah. Willie, is it different for you to talk to kids in Canada than it is in the States, or all kids when it comes to your message the same thing?
I think all kids are all the same, you know. I just try and, you know, just let them know that there is another sport that they can play and feeling good about themselves and liking themselves and trying to be a better person.
Kevin, you've seen, you know, the reaction to, you know, and Willie was talking in a previous conversation about they Google him and find out what the kids know, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting because what we find is, you know, a lot of the kids that we work with don't necessarily have access to the internet at home and things like that, but school they do. And after they've met Willie, that's what they're spending their lunch hour doing, is learning a little bit about who this guy is and that sort of thing. And we had the privilege yesterday of being at an assembly, and we had all of our Heroes kids come and stand up We did a little exercise and said, before Willie, all of our heroes' kids wouldn't have been able to play hockey because they were kids of color or they were mm-hmm. female. And we had to actually pull a kid out of the assembly crowd to be our kid who would have still been able to play hockey before Willie. And you could see for the kids, the light bulb went on when they realized this is what it's meant for us. And the kids really, they come to us after he's been in to our programs and they ask how Willie's doing. They say, you know what I found out about Willie? I found out that he was a baseball player and he batted left with no right eye. And like, figure, you know, how do you do that? Right. But
yeah,
these kids are going and learning about it and figuring that out. And, and they are inspired then by the time they spent with him. And the neat part is some of our high school age kids get to go spend time with Willie at the Willie O'Ree weekend. There's two more from Calgary going down in a couple of weeks with Willie. So they get that different time to be around kids, you know, older kids who have come up through the programs that he's inspired as well. And, you know, there was one of our kids came down and he pulled Willie aside one day and he said, Willie, I'm Lebanese and I learned who the first Lebanese pro hockey player was. His name was so-and-so and da-da-da. And Willie goes, oh, yeah, I know him. I know him. I played with him 2 years. So they had this whole conversation. So for this player of ours, it brought it all down to this was the guy who played hockey and Willie said that he couldn't hit the net, but boy, he could hit players, you know, and this kind of stuff. And it just, you know, it makes you realize what a small world the hockey world is, but the impact that it's making on these kids is mind-blowing, and they really appreciate that.
Norm, the importance of a program like Heroes, now that you've undertaken it and now that it's growing, and we mentioned other programs, that Ed Snyder's program in Philadelphia, Newark, there's some great programs, but now that you're into it, where do you see the value? Where are you making a difference?
I think about 15 years ago, it was very hockey-centric. We wanted to get the kids on the ice, off the streets.
Right.
Unaffordable for a lot, so we were able to get great equipment and ice time and great sponsors. Now, after 15 years, the seed that we planted, we're seeing kids in their second, third, fourth year of university. And to us, it's full circle development. So it's not about making the kids NHL players. It's about creating a really fun, safe environment for them to dream instead of having to wonder if there's food in the cupboards when they get home. So it's that fight or flight.
Right.
Right. So we want to make sure that the kids can aspire to dream, and we want to make sure that we can help them every step of the way. So having Mr. O'Ree out and talking about inspiration, talking about living your dream, talking about setting goals, that's what we want our children and our heroes to participate in and to really aspire to. We've got one hero in Toronto right now that was just accepted into aerospace engineering. Go figure, right? I mean, and he's got
now
choice.
Smarter than all of us combined that are running this program.
He's got a choice to go to two or three universities, and he's been with us since grade five. Parents are struggling a little bit, and we're hoping to acquire some funding for him to pursue his goal. So like I said, if one of the heroes ends up making the NHL, I always tell them, make sure I get the first tickets to their first game, and I'll be happy. like I said, it's all about creating an opportunity for them to achieve their dream, and we're doing it all through hockey. Go figure.
Kevin, here in Calgary, we celebrate the success of Wyatt and Nick, who both back-to-back Thurgood Marshall Scholarship Award winners with the National Hockey League.
Yep.
I mean, we've talked about the story. We've had them on. They're great kids. Willie, what is it like? I mean, you hear this and you hear, you know, Thurgood Marshall scholarships and stuff. You see the programs that you've helped nurture and to have that kind of effect. Is that what you intended? Is that what you were hoping for when this all started?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the opportunity is there. All you have to do is just apply yourself.
Right.
And work hard. There's no substitute for hard work. If anybody tells you there is, they're lying to you. You only get out of a thing what you put into it. And if you go out and work as hard as you can, that's all we can expect. So I'm very happy when I have the opportunity to come to these programs and talk to these kids and talk to the directors. And it just gives me a nice feeling that I know that these boys and girls are getting an opportunity to make a better life for themselves and to search out their dreams and goals.
Willie O'Ree's our guest, Kevin Hodgson and Norm Flynn from Heroes. Is there a lot of information sharing? Willie travels around the league, but do the groups share information, Norm?
The best time we do that is at the Willie O'Ree weekend.
Okay.
That's in 2 weeks in Philadelphia, where we get a lot of the executive directors from the various programs throughout North America there. And it's a good time for us to sit in the stands and let the Ed Snyder Foundation look after all the exercises and all the practices and all the off-ice activities. It gives us a good time or a good chance to all get together and share ideas. Best practice. Mm. What are we doing well? What do we need? What do we have to work on? And so that's a great weekend for the kids, but it's also a great weekend for the adults too, right, to get together, because we're geographically separated throughout North America. So it's very difficult to get together all the time. So we use the Willie O'Ree weekend to really organize our thoughts, sure, and to set a really good standard for the next sort of hockey season coming up.
Is this, do you do much beyond hockey? Do you share information with other sports? Is this, or what we're talking about, is this basically a hockey project? I mean, are other sports doing this, Willie?
I don't believe so. As I said, I've been doing this for 18 years.
Yeah.
And you know, but I watch football and sure, baseball and the other sports. But usually when I travel, I just specify about hockey,
okay,
and school and setting goals.
It's kind of like you know what you know. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
why try and reinvent the wheel?
Yeah.
And like hockey is really it's an expensive sport. And when Willie mentioned it, when you get a child on the ice with full equipment, feeling like Calgary Flame, Vancouver Canucks, Edmonton Oilers, whoever, they really, really, really shine. And it's really difficult to get them off the ice after that. Mm-hmm. So we have to make sure that we're there for the long term.
Right.
We just don't want to feed them for the day. We want to feed them for a lifetime. And so we believe in that full service, our full circle development for our program. And Willie has been out to 95% of our programs, mm-hmm, seeing all of our kids.
I think one of the unique things hockey has in North America, first of all, we still have our Jackie Robinson here with us.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, hockey guys are different than baseball guys and football guys. You know, like, you know, having the opportunity to be with Willie in a lot of different places, you know, and watch it today, the Minnesota Wild, and Matt Dumba saw Willie and right over to talk to him and shake, yeah, his hand and that sort of stuff. And when a guy like Willie asks for one of these players to jump in and help him with what he's doing, they're there right away. And oftentimes Willie doesn't even have to ask. And so I think that's part of it, is that the NHL has been able to trickle this down because hockey guys really want to look after, you know, the players and want to get the next generation. And I, you know, the Jerome McGinleys and the Joel Wards and all these guys that, you know, every chance they get to thank Willie, the way they thank him is by giving back to programs in their communities and stuff like that. And I really get the sense from being around the different things the NHL does that we're lucky with this sport and the efforts to really bring in the kids that otherwise wouldn't get to the sport. I think hockey's maybe taking a lead that some of the other sports aren't doing or aren't in a position to do.
The racial divide that existed in our society when you broke in, Willie, I hate to talk like you're not here, you're right here. I don't want to be one of those guys that just wants to glom over the world and say, hey, you know, we're enlightened, we're beyond that. So let me ask you, are we still dealing with those issues? Are we still dealing with, you know, racial issues when it comes to sports and things like that? Have we beaten it? Have we finished? Do we still have work to do? How would you describe that?
Well, we still have work to do. I mean, you know, when I played, you know, I was subject to, you know, the racial slurs and racial remarks. And I even get racial slurs and remarks, you know, off the ice when I'm traveling, you know, in restaurants and mm-hmm, in places. And I just think that, you know, we have to stay and be educated. And you know, let everybody know that you know there are different races. But you know, when I get up in the morning and look in the mirror, you know, I don't see a black man or a brown man. I just see a man. And I think until everybody you know, realizes that everybody is is equal.
Mm-hmm.
And you have problems, but it just, we have to work at it. We just have to keep working and keep working, and hopefully, you know, it'll blend in. They say repetitious, 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 and I think that's a lot of things. And like when I conduct clinics and I'm on the ice with the kids and I see them just with one hand on their stick, I say, two hands, and, mm-hmm, you know, I may say it 200 times, but eventually it'll sink in and they'll get two hands on the stick, and I think basically, that's what we need to do. But, you know, you just can do what you can do.
Right.
I mean, you know.
What about for you guys?
You know, when we have the chance to go to these Willie O'Ree weekends and some of these events, it makes me proud to be Canadian in the sense that I think that we're doing a better job in Canada. I think, you know, talking to some of the U.S. programs and stuff, they're still fighting the fight, and they're still having to really strongly advocate for the rights for inner city African-American youth, for example, mm-hmm. that they have a place in the game of hockey. There's lots of people who think they don't. And I think there's a lot less of those people here. So I think we're going in the right direction. But, you know, Willie was with our kids in Bowness yesterday on the ice, and as we were putting the gear away, one of our participants, he's a First Nations kid, and he's standing next to me, and he goes, "These guys are real good hockey players, Kevin." I said, "Yeah, they are." I go, "But look closely, what do you see?" And he said, "They're all white kids. You know, Willie just told me we're trying to get all these kids playing." And there was actually an African-American player down in the far end that he didn't see. And we led to this conversation. We said, "That's why Willie's out here. That's why we're talking about all the time." And you, as a 12-year-old First Nations player, if younger kids from your community see you playing, they're more likely to play. So it doesn't happen overnight. We got to keep chipping away. And you can see the light bulb go off for that kid.
Yeah.
And now he wants to be, he knows that if he just comes and plays, he can be a role model for young people from his community. So I think in Canada we're doing a better job. I think some of the U.S. cities, you know, they're still fighting a real fight. But I think it's, you know, I think if we just keep going, if we keep trying and all that, I mean, we, you know, every year it gets a little bit better, I think. And, you know, Willie said yesterday to the kids, and I think it fits into what we're talking about here, you know, failure is temporary. It's when you give up that it becomes permanent.
Yeah,
and it's true.
Yeah, we're going to have days where kids get some of those racial things or get told they don't belong. And, you know, we've had that at our rinks where people have said, "Well, these kids in poverty don't belong in the hockey rink."
Yeah.
The day we give up and stop trying to fight on behalf of those kids, that's when we're in trouble. Doesn't matter if we have a bad day here or there, but we just can't give up.
Something Norm said, though, I mean, we battle that, we continue to battle that, we also have to battle the cost. I can only imagine that inner city programs in the United States, let alone in Canada, where it's ingrained in the society, it's probably difficult to get the equipment, right?
Well, it's funny you mention that, because we are just launching a campaign in mid-March. It's called Be a Hero to a Hero. And we worked out our costs for a full year cycle that includes nutrition programs, that includes on-ice sessions, weekly on-ice sessions, off-ice activities that we take the kids to, either a Flame game, a museum, university visits and things like that, transportation, and like a really fun, safe environment averages out to about $1,000, which is a fraction of a cost if you're playing organized hockey. So we're going to launch a program where a person or a company or a hockey team could sponsor a child. So it's going to be a hero to a hero. And we're hoping that's going to take us to the next level so we can help more children in more communities across Canada. And you know, things don't operate without wonderful sponsors like the Flames Foundation, without CIBC, without TELUS. I mean, these guys are really in our backyard, and are not in our backyard, but they have our back. And they want to make sure that we move in the right direction and continue to grow in more communities.
It is. And I think, you know, and I've said this before, volunteers are the difference. Mm. And that's what makes it from being $4,000 to play rep level hockey to us being able to do what we do for the $1,000 a year and that sort of thing. You know, the volunteers and the people that are committed and caring and that sort of thing. And that extends to the teachers you know, Rob, you'd be a terrible car salesman because you'd soft sell it too. But guys like you and guys who bring together the hockey community here, there's great people here doing great things for kids, not just our program. And the cost thing, you know, the three of us at the table aren't going to be able to fix the cost thing.
Right.
But that doesn't mean we can't make it accessible. And I think that's what Willie's taught us is, you know, if you can't bring the kids to the game, bring the game to the kids. And if you do that, we're going to get more kids on the ice.
Well, to use your line, you'd make a terrible car salesman too, because the three people at this table have done incredible work and you should all be congratulated. But maybe nobody more so than you. Mr. O'Ree, indeed an honor. Thank you for coming to Calgary. Thank you for spreading your message. Continued good luck, good health, and I can't wait to see you back here again.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
I realized, you know, the first time I met Willie, the impact he'd have on my life and that sort of thing. And I learned, you know, I've spent probably, what, 20 weekends with this guy, and I still learn something new every time. I learned today that he was probably a terrible car salesman because I listened to him soft sell the impact that he's made in a lot of kids' lives, you know, over the years. But, you know, I hope when I'm 80, I'm ripping around like Willie is and making impacts on people's lives the way that he is. I think we're, you know, our organization is really fortunate to be inspired by him. And personally, you know, all of us that get to spend a little time with him, I think it makes us better people as well.
Norm, the legacy of Willie O'Ree kind of blends into Heroes, doesn't it? I mean, we talk about the work that he's done all over the nation. Now you're doing it all over the world, really, right?
I met Willie 16 years ago in Salt Lake City at a Hockey is for Everyone initiative. And I went in blind, not knowing what's going on with what Willie was doing, with what the NHL was doing, with kids in areas that they never had a chance to play. And that developed a really good footprint for us to set the Heroes program in motion. So 15 years ago, we started with one program in downtown Eastside with 36 boys and girls. We now have 18 programs. We're working with over 650 boys and girls a year. Next year, we'll have 20 programs. It keeps growing exponentially. And it's to do with a lot of our volunteers, but it's got a lot to do with the engine and with Willie in the driver's seat. And, you know, him coming to speak to the kids is wonderful. The kids really appreciate it, having like a guest speaker like Mr. O'Ree. And at the end of the day, they're really learning a lot about history.
Yeah. Willie, is it different for you to talk to kids in Canada than it is in the States, or are all kids, when it comes to your message, the same thing?
I think all kids are all the same, you know. I just try and, you know, just let them know that there is another sport that they can play and feeling good about themselves and liking themselves and trying to be a better person.
Kevin, you've seen, you know, the reaction to, you know, and Willie was talking in a previous conversation about they Google him and find out what he's, the kids know, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting because what we find is, you know, a lot of the kids that we work with don't necessarily have access to the internet at home and things like that, but school they do. And after they've met Willie, that's what they're spending their lunch hour doing, is learning a little bit about who this guy is and that sort of thing. And we had the privilege yesterday of being at an assembly, and we had all of our Heroes kids come and stand up. We did a little exercise and said, before Willie, all of our Heroes kids wouldn't have been able to play hockey because they were kids of color or they were female. And we had to actually pull a kid out of the assembly crowd to be our kid who would have still been able to play hockey before Willie. And you could see for the kids, the light bulb went on when they realized this is what it's meant for us. And, you know, and the kids really, you know, they come to us after he's been in to our programs and they ask how Willie's doing. They say, you know what I found out about Willie? I found out that he was a baseball player and he batted left with no right eye. And like, figure, you know, how do you do that? Right. But these kids are going and learning about it and figuring that out. And, you know, and they are inspired then by the time they spent with them. And the neat part is some of our high school age kids get to go spend time with Willie at the Willie O'Ree weekend. There's two more from Calgary going down in a couple of weeks with Willie. So they get that different time to be around kids, you know, older kids who have come up through the programs that he's inspired as well. And, you know, there was one of our kids came down and he pulled Willie aside one day and he said, Willie, I'm Lebanese, and I learned who the first Lebanese pro hockey player was. His name was so-and-so, and da-da-da. And he goes, oh, yeah, I know him. I know him. I played with him 2 years. So they had this whole conversation. So for this player of ours, it brought it all down to this was the guy who played hockey, and Willie said that he couldn't hit the net, but, boy, he could hit players, you know, and this kind of stuff. And it just, you know, it makes you realize what a small world the hockey world is, but the impact that it's making on these kids is mind-blowing, and they really appreciate that.
Norm, the importance of a program like Heroes, now that you've undertaken it and now that it's growing, and we mentioned other programs, that Ed Snyder's program in Philadelphia, Newark, there's some great programs, but now that you're into it, where do you see the value? Where are you making a difference?
I think about 15 years ago, it was very hockey-centric. We wanted to get the kids on the ice, off the streets.
Right.
Unaffordable for a lot, so we were able to get great equipment and ice time and great sponsors. Now, after 15 years, the seed that we planted, we're seeing kids in their second, third, fourth year of university. And to us, it's full circle development. So it's not about making the kids NHL players. It's about creating a really fun, safe environment for them to dream instead of having to wonder if there's food in the cupboards when they get home. So it's that fight or flight.
Right.
Right. So we want to make sure that the kids can aspire to dream, and we want to make sure that we can help them every step of the way. So having Mr. O'Ree out and talking about inspiration, talking about living your dream, talking about setting goals, that's what we want our children and our heroes to participate in and to really aspire to. We've got one hero in Toronto right now that was just accepted into aerospace engineering, Go figure, right? I mean, and he's got
his
choice.
He's now smarter than all of us combined that are running this program.
And he's got a choice to go to two or three universities, and he's been with us since grade five. You know, parents are struggling a little bit, and we're hoping to acquire some funding for him to pursue his goal. So like I said, if one of the heroes ends up making the NHL, I always tell them, make sure I get the first tickets to their first game, and I'll be happy. Like I said, it's all about creating an opportunity for them to achieve their dream, and we're doing it all through hockey. Go figure.
Kevin, here in Calgary, we celebrate the success of Wyatt and Nick, who both back-to-back Thurgood Marshall Scholarship Award winners with the National Hockey League.
Yep.
I mean, we've talked about the story. We've had them on. They're great kids. Willie, what is it like? I mean, you hear this and you hear, you know, Thurgood Marshall scholarships and stuff. You see the programs that you've helped nurture and to have that kind of effect. Is that what you intended? Is that what you were hoping for when this all started?
Yeah, the opportunity is there. All you have to do is just apply yourself.
Right.
And work hard. There's no substitute for hard work. There really, and no. If anybody tells you there is, they're lying to you. You only get out of a thing what you put into it. And if you go out and work as hard as you can, that's all we can expect. So I'm very happy when I have the opportunity to come to these programs and talk to these kids and talk to the directors. And it just gives me a nice feeling that I know that these boys and girls are getting an opportunity to make a better life for themselves and to search out their dreams and goals.
Willie O'Ree's our guest, Kevin Hodgson and Norm Flynn from Heroes. Is there a lot of information sharing? Willie travels around the league, but do the groups share information, Norm?
The best time we do that is at the Willie O'Ree weekend.
Okay.
That's in 2 weeks in Philadelphia, where we get a lot of the executive directors from the various programs throughout North America there. And it's a good time for us to sit in the stands and let the Ed Schneider Foundation look after all the exercises and all the practices and all the off-ice activities. It gives us a good time or a good chance to all get together and share ideas, best practice. Mm. What are we doing well? What do we need? What do we have to work on? So that's a great weekend for the kids, but it's also a great weekend for the adults too,
right,
to get together because we're geographically separated throughout North America. So it's very difficult to get together all the time. So we use the Willie O'Ree weekend to really organize our thoughts,
sure,
and to set a really good standard for the next sort of hockey season coming up.
Is this, do you do much beyond hockey? Do you share information with other sports? Is this, or what we're talking about, is this basically a hockey project? I mean, are other sports doing this, Willie?
I don't believe so. As I said, I've been doing this for 18 years.
Yeah.
And you know, but I watch football and
sure,
baseball and the other sports. But usually when I travel, I just specify about hockey,
okay,
and school and setting goals.
It's kind of like you know what you know.
Mm-hmm.
So why try and reinvent the wheel?
Yeah.
And like hockey is really it's an expensive sport. And when Willie mentioned it, when you get a child on the ice with full equipment, feeling like Calgary Flame, Vancouver Canuck, Edmonton Oiler, whoever, they really, really, really shine. And it's really difficult to get them off the ice after that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make sure that we're there for the long term.
Right.
We just don't want to feed them for the day, we want to feed them for a lifetime. And so we believe in that full survey, our full circle development for our program. And Willie has been out to 95% of our programs, mm-hmm, seeing all of our kids.
I think one of the unique things hockey has in North America, first of all, we still have our Jackie Robinson here with us.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, hockey guys are different than baseball guys and football guys. You know, like, you know, having the opportunity to be with Willie in a lot of different places, you know, and watch it today, the Minnesota Wild, and Matt Dumba saw William right over to talk to him and shake his hand and that sort of stuff. And when a guy like Willie asks for one of these players to jump in and help him with what he's doing, they're there right away. And oftentimes Willie doesn't even have to ask. And so I think that's part of it, is that the NHL has been able to trickle this down because hockey guys really want to look after the players and want to get the next generation. And I, you know, the Jerome McGinleys and the Joel Wards and all these guys that, you know, every chance they get to thank Willie, the way they thank him is by giving back to programs in their communities and stuff like that. And I really get the sense from being around the different things the NHL does that we're lucky with this sport and the efforts to really bring in the kids that otherwise wouldn't get to the sport. I think hockey's maybe taking a lead that some of the other sports aren't doing or aren't in a position to do.
The racial divide that existed in our society when you broke in, Willie, I hate to talk like you're not here, you're right here. I don't want to be one of those guys that just wants to glom over the world and say, hey, you know, we're enlightened, we're beyond that. So let me ask you, are we still dealing with those issues? Are we still dealing with, you know, racial issues when it comes to sports and things like that? Have we beaten it? Have we finished? Do we still have work to do? How would you describe that?
Well, we still have work to do. I mean, when I played, you know, I was subject to, you know, the racial slurs and racial remarks. And I even get racial slurs and remarks, off the ice when I'm traveling, in restaurants and in places. And I just think that, we have to stay and be educated. And let everybody know that there are different races, but when I get up in the morning and look in the mirror, I don't see a black man or a brown man. I just see a man, and I think until everybody realizes that everybody is is equal, you have problems, but we have to work at it. We just have to keep working and keep working, and hopefully, it'll blend in. They say repetitious, 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 and I think that's a lot of things. And like when I conduct clinics and I'm on the ice with the kids and I see them just with one hand on their stick, I say, two hands, and, I may say it 200 times. But eventually it'll sink in, and they'll get two hands on the stick, and I think, basically, that's what we need to do. But, you just can do what you can do.
Right.
I mean,
What about for you guys?
When we have the chance to go to these Willie O'Ree weekends and some of these events, it makes me proud to be Canadian in the sense that I think that we're doing a better job in Canada. I think, talking to some of the U.S. programs and stuff, they're still fighting the fight, and they're still having to really strongly advocate for the rights for inner city African-American youth, for example, that they have a place in the game of hockey. There's lots of people who think they don't. And I think there's a lot less of those people here. So I think we're going in the right direction. But, Willie was with our kids in Bowness yesterday on the ice. And as we were putting the gear away, one of our participants, he's a First Nations kid, and he's standing next to me. And he goes, these guys are real good hockey players, Kevin. I said, yeah, they are. I go, but look closely. What do you see? And he said, they're all white kids. Willie just told me we're trying to get all these kids playing. And there was actually an African-American player down in the far end that he didn't see. And we led to this conversation. We said, that's why Willie's out here. That's why we're talking about all the time. And you, as a 12-year-old First Nations player, if younger kids from your community see you playing, they're more likely to play. So it doesn't happen overnight. We got to keep chipping away. And you can see the light bulb go off for that kid.
Yeah.
And now he wants to be... He knows that if he just comes and plays, he can be a role model for young people from his community. So I think in Canada we're doing a better job. I think some of the U.S. cities, they're still fighting a real fight. But I think it's, I think if we just keep going, if we keep trying and all that, I mean, we every year it gets a little bit better, I think. And, Willie said yesterday to the kids, and I think it fits into what we're talking about here, failure is temporary. It's when you give up that it becomes permanent.
Yeah, and it's true.
Yeah, we're going to have days where kids get some of those racial things or get told they don't belong. And, we've had that at our rinks where people have said, well, these kids in poverty don't belong in the hockey rink.
Yeah.
The day we give up and stop trying to fight on behalf of those kids, that's when we're in trouble. Doesn't matter if we have a bad day here or there, but we just can't give up.
Something Norm said, though, I mean, we battle that. We continue to battle that. We also have to battle the cost. I can only imagine that inner city programs in the United States, let alone in Canada, where it's ingrained in the society, it's probably difficult to get the equipment, right?
Well, it's funny you mention that because we are just launching a campaign in mid-March. It's called Be a Hero to a Hero. And we worked out our costs for a full year cycle that includes nutrition programs, that includes on-ice sessions, weekly on-ice sessions, off-ice activities that we take the kids to, either a Flame game, a museum, university visits and things like that, transportation, and like a really fun, safe environment averages out to about $1,000, which is a fraction of a cost if you're playing organized hockey. So we're going to launch a program where a person or a company or a hockey team could sponsor a child. So it's going to be a hero to a hero. And we're hoping that's going to take us to the next level so we can help more children and more communities across Canada. And you know, things don't operate without wonderful sponsors like the Flames Foundation, without CIBC, without TELUS. I mean, these guys are really in our backyard, and are not in our backyard, but they have our back. And they want to make sure that we move in the right direction and continue to grow in more communities.
It is. And I think, you know, and I've said this before, volunteers are the difference. And that's what makes it from being $4,000 to play rep level hockey to us being able to do what we do for the $1,000 a year and that sort of thing. You know, the volunteers and the people that are committed and caring and that sort of thing. And that extends to the teachers you know, Rob, you'd be a terrible car salesman because you'd soft sell it too. But guys like you and guys who bring together the hockey community here, there's great people here doing great things for kids, not just our program. And the cost thing, you know, the three of us at the table aren't going to be able to fix the cost thing.
Right.
But that doesn't mean we can't make it accessible. And I think that's what Willie's taught us is, you know, if you can't bring the kids to the game, bring the game to the kids. And if you do that, we're going to get more kids on the ice.
Well, to use your line, you'd make a terrible car salesman too, because the three people at this table have done incredible work and you should all be congratulated. But maybe nobody more so than you. Mr. O'Ree, indeed an honor. Thank you for coming to Calgary. Thank you for spreading your message. Continued good luck, good health, and I can't wait to see you back here again.
Thank you very much. A pleasure.
Thank you.